Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Wednesday, May 14th, 2008, and this is show number 151. What the heck? Another surprise episode? That's just crazy. Well, I told you on Sunday's show that Bart and I weren't able to get together, but I sort of lied. Okay, not really lied. We didn't get together until Sunday. By then, I'd already put together enough material for a full show, so I decided to make another bonus show simply called Chit Chat Across the Pond. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you doing today, Bart?
I'm good. A little warm on this end of the pond today, but I'm good. And having awful internet troubles, but so far we're communicating successfully. So fingers crossed, touch wood, etc.
You know, it's funny in the podosphere or whatever you call it, people are very aware of your internet problems. I was on Uvu last night, and some people were saying, "Hey, so when is Bart getting DSL? Has he told you? Does he know anything yet?" That was funny that people know.
That's good. Well, no, the good news on the DSL front is it's ordered. And they say it'll be, 7 to 10 days until it's all sorted out.
Were you able to dodge the fee on the phone, the 100 quid?
Well, one representative says, "Oh, no, it's not down on your account, it's being charged, so you should be okay. And if you're not, ring us back." So I'll see when I get my first bill, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you trust them completely, right?
Oh, yeah, eminently.
Now, what's funny is we tested out Skype yesterday with your mother's satellite, and it was actually not that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad, considering the fact that it's satellite broadband, which means you have a standing latency of 1 second, no matter how good the connection is. And that was actually better than we're getting through ICE, which is, I'm supposed to be on what they call their gaming broadband package, and I tell you, it's bad enough to talk over. Just imagine trying to play some sort of game over this. I mean, you get one frame and then half an hour later you might get another frame. Disaster area altogether.
I think you might be killed in the first few seconds, that's for sure.
The only screen you'd ever see is you dying, yeah. It's like, you're dead. It's like, but I never saw anything.
I love it. Well, now you were out of town all week and I was lonely without you, but you were off at your mom's house. And did that provide some technical adventures for you?
Yeah, my parents, I'm slightly to blame for this, but my parents got in broadband and they didn't want to spend money on a router because satellite broadband is very expensive to get in. But I said, look, if you want to use more than one computer at a time, you're going to need a router. I was like, oh, all right then. But cheapest one you can find. Uh-oh. So we went down and we bought the cheapest router we could find, and it's a piece of junk. It's called MIMO or something. But basically, the wireless on it is disastrous. It just keeps dropping randomly. And I've tried everything, and it just can't get it to behave. I've tried every channel. So when I'm on my laptop, I lose connections all the time, and it's just painful. So I used their desktop for quite a bit of the time I was there, which runs Windows XP. And it was an experience to be back on XP for a week. Not an entirely good one. But it was an eye-opening experience because it sort of reminds me that we actually have it quite good. We actually have it very good. What also I was shocked by was how many of the programs I use on a daily basis are cross-platform, because I was actually, I was using Firefox, I was using Twirl for Twitter, mm-hmm. and then I was using Pigeon, which is basically the Windows equivalent of Adium, although I have to say Adium is a much more polished client than Twitter than Pigeon. But it's the same back end underneath the two of them.
And at least you can communicate with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just that it's all in such giant big text. So if you have more than like 20 people in your contact list, it doesn't fit in the screen anymore. And it's just big and blocky compared to Adium, which is fairly nice and tight and pretty nicely presented app, really. Plus it squawks like a duck. A lot to be said for ducks. Cute icons, cute squawking. You know, a lot to be said for that. But, you know, so it's a very different experience. But on the one hand, I was very un at home because I had the stupid start menu at the bottom. I think actually what annoyed me the most, apart from the fact that I don't have a proper application launcher, so I just simply put, there was only three programs I was using, so I put those three shortcuts on the desktop and just double-clicked on them, and that was fine. That had to make do as an application launcher, but I'm not used to that. I'm used to much quicker ways of launching apps and start menus and stuff.
Well, can I make a suggestion for next time on that? I use Launchy from Launchy.net, which is open source and does just a beautiful job of, you know, a control space bar, boom, type in a couple of characters, you're in. It works beautifully. I don't use the start menu at all at work.
Yeah, I probably should do that, although I wonder what my parents will think if I start installing more stuff. But nah, no. If I set myself up my own account, so maybe I can just have it in my account.
There you go.
Hopefully. But I suppose what I find very strange is this idea of having every single solitary window you open show up separately in the start menu. Because you open up three or four chat windows, and that's it, your start menu's full.
Yeah. Well,
just it doesn't. It does start to group them eventually, but it just doesn't make sense.
Now, did you use the control tab to flip back and forth between them, or alt tab, I think it is?
Okay, so nipping over and back between windows was very... I just found the dock actually a much better model, which is strange, because the dock isn't a good application launcher. And the start menu beats the dock as an application launcher, but in terms of actually nipping over and back between your various windows and stuff, I actually find the dock is a hell of a lot easier than all these big text-heavy, wide slabs, you know, rather than simply an icon.
You know, it's funny, I had somebody write into to Dumb Question Corner asking, how do I switch between windows within a single application, because they were used to being able to do it on Windows, and it never occurred to me that that would be a good thing, but I guess that's something you could get used to wanting.
Yeah, well, you can do it on the Mac as well. It's Alt Apple and then whatever is next to your Shift key.
It actually, I believe it's application dependent, because I found out she was asking specifically in Microsoft Word, and it was this really weird stroke, like Alt Function F6.
Ah, that's because Microsoft don't use or didn't use Cocoa. Ah. I think that's probably fixed with the latest Office, which is done in Xcode, isn't it?
I don't know, and I haven't upgraded to 2008, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, Office is definitely an exception in many, many ways. But yeah, normally it's Alt and then, or sorry, Apple and then whatever key is next to the Shift. So if you have a European keyboard, that's the pipe. And I think on the American one, it's a tilde or backtick or something.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah.
It's always the key which is there. So it depends on your keyboard layout, which is a nice touch. The other thing actually that really annoyed me about Windows was the font rendering. I'm so used to the nice, smooth, anti-aliased fonts on the Mac. No matter how small they are, they still look smooth and clean. Whereas on Windows, when the font gets small, it becomes pixelated, literally square and horrible.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Oh, it used to drive me mad when I was developing web pages, because I used to not use H1 tags anywhere, but make images so that they wouldn't look all horrible. And now on the Mac, I really don't care. Everything looks nice. And then I go back to Windows and I put up my blog on Windows. I go, oh my God, this looks horrid. But I don't care.
Maybe it's because I'm 50 and I can't see the fonts that are that small anyway, so I wouldn't even know if it were pixelated.
Well, now, on my parents' machine, it's big fonts as well that are significantly blockier. They're not properly anti-aliased. They do not look as well as Mac fonts. Mac fonts, to me, always look like they're written on paper, whereas Windows fonts look like they're shoehorned into a screen.
Huh.
I don't like them at all. Just so much easier on the eyes than nice, smooth, anti-aliased fonts on the Mac. It's actually a real luxury. One of the first things I remember noticing when I moved to the Mac, and it's one of the first things I missed when I went back to Windows for a week. It was just everywhere, and it just started annoying me more and more everywhere I looked. It's like, it's over there, and it's over there, it's everywhere.
Well, I'm glad you pointed it out so it can irritate all of us now, too, and make sure we notice it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have anything nice to say about Windows?
I do. I have two nice things to say. The first thing is fast user switching on Windows strikes me as being a lot faster than on the Mac. And also the little screen. So, you know, when the screensaver kicks in, it drops you back out to this fast user switching screen where you see all the accounts and how many programs are running and whether or not they're logged in and how many email messages they have and stuff. That's actually a nicer and easier way to flip over and back than the Mac way for fast user switching. It's a hell of a lot more obvious. Because the Mac one is not obvious and it's not on by default.
Right, right. Now, how do you initiate fast user switching on Windows?
Well, if you go to log out, it'll ask you whether you like the fast user switch instead. And once the screensaver kicks in, when you move the mouse again, you're out on this sort of first window where you see the list of accounts with the little pictures next to it. And you simply click on the one you want to go to. And then in you are. And it just switches you straight in. It also gives you a little status. So, you know, this one's logged in and has 5 running programs and 12 new emails, or, you know, 4 running programs and 1 new email. And I was exceptionally pleasantly surprised. Microsoft have obviously opened up the APIs for this because my parents don't use Outlook and it could still correctly identify the amount of new mails they had.
Oh, and they use Thunderbird. Nice.
So I thought that was interesting to see that kind of integration on Microsoft products. So they're using Thunderbird and they're still getting all that functionality. And it just occurred to me that it's more obvious than the Mac one, more straightforward. It's there by default, whereas on the Mac, you have to hunt for it to turn it on. The effect is insanely cool, and it's a great wow factor for demonstrating the Mac to people. But it's not actually that easy for your day-to-day use, whereas in Windows it is.
That's true. I didn't use it for a real long time, and then I went to use it to set up a desktop for a demonstration. I wanted it to be real clean looking, and I sat there going, where is it? I forget, how did I used to get to that?
Yeah, because it's hidden way down in your account options or something to enable it, and then you have to click on your name. It's not obvious to me.
Yeah.
It works really well on the Mac, but I thought it was better done on Windows, which is unusual for such, I consider that to be a power feature. And Windows tends not to be as good for the power users, in my opinion. But in that case, I think they've done it better.
Well, in Vista, or whether they, if they managed to keep it going, they probably broke it.
Yeah, they probably broke it. Yeah, my dad's laptop is Vista, so I steered clear of that one.
Oh, okay.
Stuck to the good old family PC that I built with my own hands, literally.
Well, anything else you liked?
Yeah, I noticed that the Finder and the Mac is a pretty poor way to manage your photographs.
Yeah.
It just looks at them as files. Okay, you can quick look into them, which is nice. And you can now use quick look to do slideshows and stuff. But actually in Windows, it's better. Not only does it automatically give you the nice sort of thumbnail views of good, big, chunky thumbnails you can actually do something with, and you can do your slideshow straight in there without any hassle, but you can even right-click on photographs and do basic image manipulation. Like, my father's digital camera doesn't do any of this fancy stuff about knowing which orientation it's at. So it doesn't know that it was you held in portrait. So when you download your pictures, a lot of them are sideways. So you just select them all, right-click, rotate right, bing, done.
Oh, that's a nice feature.
Yeah, it's exceptionally nice. So basically, I just watched him as he did his standard thing. Here's the camera. Oh, I want to show you these cool pictures we took while we were in Spain. Okay, plug it in, drag and drop the files across, put it into thumbnail view, da-da-da, select, right-click, rotate. Okay, click here for a slideshow, bang, here's all the pictures, scan through them. And it worked fantastically, and all he needed was the Windows Explorer. And he was able to do the very basics and show me the photographs, which I don't find the Finders as good for.
Yeah, I find that I've noticed the same thing on Windows. I really envy, all along it's been the case too, obviously. Windows XP is, 72 years old now, but they've always had that feature, and Apple is just starting to get to where it's a little bit easier, but it still doesn't completely meet the mail. I've been trying to figure out, I still don't have a way to be able to open up a series of photos and while I'm looking at them, delete the ones I don't want anymore, but keep going and rename them as I go, because I like to add a little extension to remind myself of which photo's which. And I have yet to find a really good way to do that. The best I have so far is that program I keep talking about, ZXEE. That seems to get it partway there.
Yeah, Z is pretty decent. Spotlight gets you partway as well, but it's all partway stuff. If you're going to properly dive into the Appleverse, then Apple actually have a way better photo management tool than anything that comes with Windows. It's called iPhoto. But for people like yourself who don't buy into iPhoto, if the choice is Finder or Explorer, Explorer wins. If the choice is iPhoto or Explorer, iPhoto wins hands down.
Okay, but here again, here's the problem. What I want to be able to do is bring these photos in and delete the ones I don't want. If I delete them, isn't there still a copy left laying around in iPhoto?
Just delete it, empty your recycle bin.
By the way, it's called a trash can on the Mac, but you have been away for a while.
Okay, empty your trash. Yeah, iPhoto has its own trash, which is where stuff goes. But I use iPhoto to go through that, and I shoot an insane amount of shots because I always want to make sure I've tried every possibility. And then when I get home, I, bin literally, and I'm not actually exaggerating, bin 90% of my photos and keep the good ones. And I do that all in iPhoto, and it's very quick. And very good for
backspace. I still get the sense it's leaving something somewhere. I still get the feeling.
Once you empty that trash, it's gone.
But if I look in the trash, if I put something in the trash in iPhoto and then I look in the real trash, there's nothing in it.
No, but it's in iPhoto's trash. So if you empty iPhoto's trash, all gone. And it is, because honestly, I only have 8 gigs of free space on my MacBook Pro, and I know how much I'm using because I am watching that teeny bit of space like a hawk. And, so I'll suck in 2 gigs of photographs and then whittle it down to about, 20 megs or so. And as soon as I empty that recycle bin, I can see my free space coming back, and I'm not losing space, because if it was keeping stuff behind, I would be in so much trouble by now, and I'm not.
But if you make a modification to a photo, you now are paying the price of two copies of it.
Yeah, but I want the original anyway. So I want that, because I don't... I'm constantly learning when it comes to editing photographs, and I go back and I re-edit my old photographs so many times, and if I didn't have the ability to right-click, revert to original, I would have destroyed so many photographs.
Yeah, I just figure nothing I take is all that good anyway, so I... and the volume that I work with, you know, like I think my personal record now at the track meets is 451 photos at one meet, and I kept 350 of them because there were that many different kids I was filming.
See, I shoot as much as you, but I edit more.
Yeah, well, but these are all different kids, so it's, you know, I keep the best one of each kid or the best three of each kid, and so they're, you know,
the best three. You see what the problem is?
Well, but I can't just eliminate a bunch of children and say, you know, sorry, you didn't make the cut.
300 odd kids, surely.
Well, no, that's why I was saying that, like, three of each kind of thing. Or it'll be a group of kids running at once, and I'll take three shots where you see them take off from the line, and or they're running to jump, and there might be 10 shots of the same kid to get them up to where they jump, and that sequence is really interesting. But I'll do a lot of cropping on those and color correction because the lighting's always bad, and I'd be out of disk space immediately if I used iPhoto for that.
No, actually, I have to say, a friend of mine, he called over unexpectedly, because normally he comes over on Tuesday, but he came over on Monday, and I was in the process of, you know, doing some of my photo work when he came in, and I just said, I just want to finish this set, and so I just did my photo workflow, and he was just in awe, and he was like, wow, that's amazing, and I was, you know, doing the little dropper thing to pick white, and then it'll fix the white balance and stuff, and he was just looking at it going, wow, how much does that cost? That must cost hundreds, and I was like, no, that comes free with every Mac. It's like, what? You know, he absolutely could not believe how fantastic iPhoto is for free.
You know, I've been trying not to get around to telling you this, but I guess in this context it's necessary that I do. Robert Lachman is a photographer for the Los Angeles Times, which is the biggest newspaper in Los Angeles, and he has a photography website called photographyinthemac.com, and he did a little bit on Tim Verporten's podcast on the Mac Review Cast, where he brought up the fact that his tool of choice is iPhoto.
Ooh, there you go. QED, etc.
I guess. Still don't like it.
No, it's you have to buy into it 100%, because if you buy into it 50%, it's a disaster.
That might be part of the problem. I'm in 30%, so.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way at all. It's an all or nothing thing. You either use iPhoto or you don't. It's no good otherwise.
Well, as usual.
But anyway,
We have gone farther on than we thought we would, but I'm sure glad to have you back in town. I missed you while you were gone.
Yeah, it was interesting being away, although ironically, in the way in the sticks, as we call it, you know, the back of beyond where broadband is terrible and everyone complains about it, and it was way better than my broadband at home. You know. Anyway, DSL is in sight, because I'm really actually going quite mad at the moment. I'm going to ring them tomorrow just to vent. It'll do me good. I won't do the poor sod on the other end any good, but it'll do me good.
Oh, no. Well, be nice to him. You catch more flies with honey is what my dad always said.
Yeah, well, they won't put you onto their managers. So as far as I'm concerned, it's entirely their fault if they won't let you talk to someone who actually deserves to be shouted at.
That's true. But, now are you going to complain to the DSL people or the ICE people?
You sort of broke up there, but I think you said, am I going to shout at the ICE people? And I most certainly am.
Oh, okay.
My aim, I may not be successful, my aim is to get the money back for my last month.
Oh, okay.
Because
right.
They have not provided a service.
I misunderstood. You know, I thought you were going to yell at the DSL people, and I thought, man, not until they get you your service.
No. I'm going off the premise that they're good people, and the holdup there is not with them. But anyway, that's a long story. But no, so DSL is in sight, but I want to go shout at ICE. Anyway, I think we wanted to keep this one short, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we're only at 20 minutes, Bart. This is pretty good.
Okay, we still overshot. I said 10.
All right, Bart. Well, I'm glad to have you back in town where I can at least make some kind of connection with you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Indeed. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, I hope you liked getting a bonus episode this week, but I don't want you guys to start expecting it all the time just because it's happened twice in the last couple of weeks. So don't get dependent. I'm not promising extra shows, but when I can squeak them in, I'll try to do them. Okay, remember, guys, you've only got 2 more days to finish your homework assignment. Send in your audio recordings of how you found the show by Friday, May 16th to nosillacast@gmail.com. If you make that deadline, your recordings can be included in the anniversary show on Sunday night, the 18th of May. Keep up all the great emails by sending them on to allison@podfeet.com, and don't forget your dumb questions. And I mean the dumb ones. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.